Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. And wherever you find your podcast, helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you found it, you can find us for some reason on any podcast platform. You can find other respectable, more respectable maybe, podcasts. You can catch us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, I'll never call it X, Facebook and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan regardless of the season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all year long. They've got more than 30 schools to choose from, so they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm not joined by Kyle Carpenter this week. He is going to be out on family leave for the next, I don't know, he said a month, but he also hadn't cleared that with his wife in typical new dad fashion, so I don't know, he'll be back at some point, but he and his wife and their new baby are all at home, resting up, everybody's healthy, everybody's happy, as well rested as you can be with a newborn, but Kyle will be back whenever he feels like it's healthy for him and his new family, his expanded family, to be back on the pod. So it'll be me and a rotating roster of guests to come on and talk about whatever we want for our main segment. And today I've got the man himself, Westcott Eberts, here to talk about the NFL draft with us. Wes, man, how you doing?
Yeah, great, man. It's nice to dust off my podcast gear here, so it's not just an accessory on my desk. And drinking a High Life right now, normally a Lone Star guy, but I feel like that's a suitable pick for where Texas football is right now.
Living the high, that's a great segue. You've done this a time or two before, right? Great segue. Texas and several former Texas players living the high life. Texas, Steve Sarkisian probably having a weekend, just blowing up some recruits' phones. Hope Tashard Choice probably had a great weekend doing so as well. But Texas had 11 players drafted in the NFL draft this weekend, a record. Eight was the record, and then they decided to go three more that to really blow things out of the water. We knew it would be a good draft for Texas. They had most projection had them right around 8 picks, and then the last couple came off the board, and we started to have a party, at least on social media. I'm not in Austin, but it sounds like people in Austin are having a good time. But the run on Texas players was kicked off pretty early in the draft. The 16th pick happened on Thursday night. Byron Murphy, selected by the Seattle Seahawks. They liked their Longhorn D tackles up there. Our friend Puna Ford was there for a while until he left in free agency. Kansas City traded up to pick Xavier Worthy, which was not a surprise that Kansas City took him, but trading up to get him. Because there was a little bit of a run on receivers at the end of the first and start of the second round. Adonai Mitchell, shockingly, was not on the was still on the board at the end of the second or at the end of the first round. People thought he would be a first round pick. Devondre Sweat was the first one off the board in the second round. He went to Tennessee, joining Snacks Coburn on that line. Jonathan Brooks continues the rich heritage of Texas RB1s. He was the first running back off the board, 14th pick of the second round, picked up by the Carolina Panthers. That marks the second year in a row that Texas has the RB1 in the draft. Bijan, actually, according to my research, the first one since Earl Campbell to be RB1 for the NFL draft, and the first time since Jamal Charles and Chris Obanaya that Texas had running back selected in consecutive years. Adonai Mitchell finally off the board at the 20th pick to the Colts, the fifth player selected in the first two rounds, which, again, a school record, and the fourth offensive player making the first time since 2008. Jatavion Sanders goes in round four to Carolina with Jonathan Brooks. Christian Jones was number in the fifth round, number 27 in that round, 162 overall, going to Arizona. Keelan Robinson was the official one to break the record for Texas in round five, pick 32 to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Also marks the second year with Texas having two running backs selected, another first for the Longhorns. And then the surprises started to happen. Jalen Ford selected by the New Orleans Saints in round five, Ryan Watts in round six to Pittsburgh, And then Jordan Whittington, the one that got me choked up, number 213 overall to LA, a guy who came to Texas. His career didn't pan out like we thought it was. You know, Tom Herman mentioned Jordan Whittington's not going to be here for 4 years. And then Jordan Whittington's there for 6 years, but he gets drafted, making it number 11 for the weekend, going to LA. Westcott, after that long, exhaustive list of players drafted, man, as you think about the expectations of where Texas should be on draft weekend, right? It feels like the tides have shifted, because just a couple of years ago, it wasn't like this.
Yeah, no question about it. I've sat through working for Burn Origination, the two worst draft days in modern history. 2014, Hendricks Award winner Jackson Jeffcoat completely falls off the board. Justifiable, as it turns out, you know, had a nice career in the CFL, not an NFL player. 2022, after Steve Sarkisian's first season, no Texas players drafted. So just an incredible turnaround for Texas. And, you know, I think one thing that, you know, I really thought about a lot as the draft was unfolding was, you know, about how many successful undrafted free agents Texas has had in recent years. And also guys that maybe fell a little bit in the draft farther than expected, maybe farther than their actual ability warranted. And I think that was really a commentary from NFL organizations about their lack of trust for the development that was happening within the Texas football program. And so there's a couple guys that really stand out to me as a turnaround in that regard. Obviously, Keelan Robinson is a huge one, a guy that was projected as an undrafted free agent. I think he was on the consensus big boards, he was projected well outside of the draft. I think he was in, you know, the 330s. And so, you know, for him to come off the board in the fifth round, I think is really a testament to how much the NFL now trusts the development that's happening within this Texas program under Steve Sarkisian. And you know, to a larger extent, how talented that Texas running back room has been. I think there's a lot of NFL running back rooms that weren't as good as what Texas had in 2022 with Bijan Robinson, Roschon Johnson, Jonathan Brooks, Keelan Robinson. And you're talking about four NFL draft picks there. And then I think as well, you know, the job that Jeff Banks has done on special teams. Keelan Robinson is not just, you know, a return man, also a core special teams player, probably projects as a gunner on punt coverage. You know, played on other special teams units in addition to being the return man, returning a touchdown for Texas against Texas Tech in the regular season finale. You know, some of the other guys, you know, you brought up Jordan Whittington, a guy that had another hamstring injury, the latest in a long line of injuries for him that almost made him quit football after the 2021 season, you know, when he was kind of talked back into coming back by Steve Sarkisian, you know, and his mother. You know, the Rams, like a very successful organization under Sean McVay, said that they came to Austin and that everyone told them that Jordan Whittington, you know, was the heartbeat of the team. And, you know, you would see that from, you know, his effort as a blocker, wasn't necessarily a core special teams player and playing a lot of snaps, but played on a lot of different units, projects, in that area again, you know, in the NFL, but, you know, just the way that he builds culture, of course. You know, I think the greatest culture play, you know, for Texas last year, that interception against TCU where Whittington, you know, had to track back to be able to force that fumble that Texas recovered, Xavier Worthy recovered. And so I think, you know, it's remarkable the extent to which it's changed now. Christian Jones, you know, another guy, wasn't very highly regarded as a recruit. Everybody knew that it was going to take him a long time to develop, played really poorly under Kyle Flood at left tackle in his first year, kept getting better, came back for another year, continued to elevate his level of play to make himself a draftable player. I mean, that's a great, you know, recruiting sell for Kyle Flood and the type of development that he can do. And, you know, even somebody like Tavondre Sweat, you know, Bo Davis, the defensive line coach, gone to LSU now, but, you know, his Sweat's ability to elevate his play, to play more consistently, to be more mature, to, you know, sort of move past some of that, you know, party reputation. You know, obviously the DWI arrest was a little bit of a setback for him. But, you know, the first team that he met with after that was the Tennessee Titans, which drafted him near the top of his draft range projection even before that arrest. And he was able to convince them that that was more of a blip, you know, than an actual, you know, illustration of where he is, you know, in his development as a person.
Yeah. And you mentioned a couple of guys, and you know, when you talk to people who know about like how to make it in the NFL, you mentioned Keelan Robinson and Jordan Whittington being like special teams guys, right? The way to like get yourself in a locker room, think about Brendan Schooler in New England, right? The guy has made himself a mainstay on that roster because he makes plays on special teams. And so you think about Keelan Robinson, Jordan Whittington's a guy who can do that, right? Jordan Whittington's a guy who shows he's a willing blocker, right? Blocking and playing special teams are two ways to make coaches like you. And so I'm excited to see that. And again, it is just telling, I think, of how far things have come in such a short amount of time. Because, like, again, this time 2 years ago, Texas was 5-7 coming off of that awful year, and then nobody was selected in the draft, and it just felt like things were terrible. And so, you know, the big surprise, I think, for Texas fans was Adonai Mitchell's slide into the middle to latter half of the second round. And there was, like, this weird report about his like blood sugar making him difficult to deal with. And when I read that, I looked at my wife and was like, you know who else is difficult to deal with when they're hungry? Freaking everybody, right? Like when everybody's blood sugar is low, they have terrible afternoons. I have three children. They have bad afternoons when their blood sugar is low. I have bad afternoons when my blood sugar is low. It's why I keep snacks in my desk, not just because I like to snack. But like that to me is the weird situation, but it feels like he has fallen into a pretty good situation for him, a wide receiver room that I think he can quickly move up the depth chart. A quarterback that maybe has some room to develop, but he's a consistent target that I think that you know, Indianapolis can utilize and use and help a young quarterback gain some confidence.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to the point about blood sugar, I get the fear when my girlfriend hasn't eaten for a while and starts getting hangry, and it's incumbent on me to be able to secure some food for her. So definitely an extremely relatable thing. You know, I don't know if, and hopefully everybody's seen, you know, Colts general manager Chris Ballard with an expletive filled rant about silly season, unnamed sources, dropping this type of, you know, character assassination on guys before the NFL draft. Unfortunately, extremely typical for that. But yeah, you know, I agree that, you know, I think Adonai Mitchell, you know, has fallen into, you know, what could be a good situation. Anthony Richardson, obviously a guy with all the arm talent in the world. Adonai, you know, guy with 4.42 speed in the 40-yard dash. Excellent route runner, guy that can really get open deep. You know, kind of struck me, you know, Keon Coleman from Florida State coming off the board. Got to love the ball skills, you know, that guy has. You know, the difference is that Keon Coleman is not particularly explosive. He's a guy that, you know, Josh Allen is going to have to throw him open on a lot of plays in the NFL. Anthony Richardson is not going to have to throw A.D. Mitchell open in the NFL. He's going to create separation based on his route running ability. You know, the unusual twitchiness that he has for a guy, you know, who's 6'3", obviously the elite speed. Really shocking to me that he fell as far as he did. And frankly, I think that he's going to make, you know, a lot of teams really regret that. You know, certainly in all of the interactions that I've had with him, you know, the rest of the Texas media, you know, everybody in this market has a ton of respect for who AD is as a person. You know, won two national championships with Georgia, decided to come back to Texas to be a father to his young daughter so that he could be closer to her. A very mature decision to leave, you know, an incredible situation where he'd, you know, scored four touchdowns in all four college football playoff games that he played in, including the game-winning, you know, touchdown in 2021 against Alabama. And so, you know, I think there's a level of maturity for AD there. I think he got better as a blocker while he was at Texas, working under new wide receivers coach Chris Jackson in his first season. And I'm extremely high on A.D. Mitchell's ability to really be an impact player in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, you combine a quarterback that's got one of those like huck it, chuck it arms and a guy like A.D. who's not only fast, but you mentioned like the guy is one of the best in-flight ball trackers I've seen in a very long time. Like, I think back to that TCU catch that won the game for Texas where, you know, people were complaining it was a little bit of a push-off. That's fine. The ref didn't throw the flag, so it didn't happen, right? But, like, the way that he was able to, oh, I'm open. Oh, that's an underthrow. Let me come back to it and locate the ball and make a big play. Like, that's all A.D. Mitchell does. And so the combination of a guy like Anthony Richardson, who can honestly just say, screw it, A.D.'s down there somewhere and chuck the ball down there, and a guy like A.D. Mitchell who can high point the ball. I think about the, I think it was a Big 12 championship when he missed time to high point and like was able to double clutch and so athletic that he didn't actually miss out on a 50-50 ball because he was able to like double clutch and reach back for it. So I'm excited for him. I think it's going to be a great fit. I'm now a Carolina Panthers fan, which is fine. It's okay. Sorry, Dolphins, but like Jay Brooks and Jatavion Sanders. And again, hating Matt Rhule is part of being a Carolina Panthers fan. So I feel like it's just a shoe-in for me. But as we think about this and kind of spin it forward, right? We can only go about a day before we start looking at 2025, which seems ridiculous to say, but the 2025 draft conversation has already started. And it doesn't really look like Texas is going to slow down. Early projections have Texas as potentially having two players drafted in the first round, Kelvin Banks coming off the board. Some have been in the top 10. And Quinn Ewers somewhere in the top 15 or 20 because quarterbacks get overvalued in this. And again, Quinn Ewers has all of the physical tools that might make NFL teams excited. So what I want to do, Westcott, is I want to do a little numbers work on this. And this is brought to us by our friends over at Prize Picks. Again, Prize Picks is the best legal way to play player props in states like California, Florida, Texas, and more. All you need to do is go download their award-winning app from your app store. Log in, use the code Longhorn12, and they will give you up to $100 in an instant deposit match. So you can go do overs and unders. It's just you versus the numbers. Daily fantasy made easy. NBA playoffs are going right now. You've got baseball going. You've got college baseball, all the stuff. Just pick a player and a stat line and you can win. And so we're going to pick a line, Westcott, for next year. 11 is probably a lofty expectation. So that's not the number we're going to use. But Texas, again, has two projected first rounders. They had two first rounders this year. So I want to set the line at 1.5, Westcott. What do you think? Will Texas go over or under 1.5 first round draft picks in 2025?
I'm hammering that over pretty easily. You talk about Kelvin Banks. I've seen him as high as number 3 in a mock draft. I think he's really right now is a consensus number 1 tackle. Guy that's been really elite in pass protection ever since he stepped onto campus 2 years ago. Has all the physical attributes. I remember asking Kyle Flood about him. We only get the coordinators one time a year, so you got to really make it count. I asked about, what makes Kelvin Banks so special. He listed, all the physical attributes, including, balance, body control, all of those things like that. As you run down the list that Flood said that Banks really checks them all. He talked a lot about his work ethic, his competitive maturity. The one question that I do have for Kelvin Banks, he's listed it at 6'4 by Texas. If he measures in under that at all, I think that would really raise questions about his ability to stake at left tackle in the NFL. Probably needs to have a really plus wingspan in that situation to do it. That's really the only conceivable way that I could see him dropping into the second half of the first round. Quinn Ewers, as you mentioned, one of the reasons why he came back was a weak quarterback draft this year. You're talking about Carson Beck, Shedeur Sanders, who else? I think there's maybe someone else who's in that mix in some of those mock drafts as well. Certainly not as strong as this 2024 quarterback class. I expect continued improvement out of Quinn Ewers this year. I think if he can add some strength and some durability, I think his level of maturity and experience in this offense, if he can kind of clean up his footwork, improve his ability to read defenses, be a little bit of a better leader, I don't think there's any question that he's going to be a first-round draft pick, really fulfill that potential that everybody thought he had when he was ranked as, the number one recruit in the 2021 class. Considered a generational prospect. We've seen flashes of that arm talent, huge improvement from his first year as a starter to this year. If he can continue to improve on that same trajectory, which I'm not sure is really likely, he would be one of the best quarterbacks in the country, if not the best. I think a little bit more modest improvement, is likely this year, given that huge jump that he made. But I would throw another guy in there, Isaiah Bond, I see in some of those mock drafts, a guy who I expect to test similarly to Xavier Worthy. I expect for him, you know, to have a really big year. I think, you know, some of that chemistry with Quinn Ewers needs to come online. We saw some targets that didn't connect early in that spring game, but that 75-yard touchdown pass from Arch Manning to Bond on a go route, you know, beating press coverage there. Teams are going to have to, you know, slide a safety over the top there. And, you know, even if that doesn't necessarily create a lot of big plays for Bond, it's going to open up a lot of stuff, you know, for other people. I think he's a guy that has a chance to play his way into the first round. Another guy that, you know, that I might throw in there that I think, you know, has an outside chance of getting into that discussion is Ethan Burke. You know, I remember, you know, when we got our first chance to really talk to him in person last year. And, you know, he's a guy who walks in, I mean, 6'7", you know, long arms, still maturing physically, you know, becoming a more complete football player after playing lacrosse a lot growing up. You know, he's a guy that, you know, he walks into, you know, the interview room on a Monday, and that's what they look like. That's what a future first round NFL draft pick potentially could look like. I'm not sure, you know, if it's going to happen next year. You know, if he decides to come back for a senior year, you know, he probably has a better shot. But, you know, he played through a meniscus tear that he had surgery on midseason and came back from, showed a lot of toughness last year, showed a you know, really developing game. And, you know, just with his length and work ethic, he's another one of those guys, you know, like a lot of guys in this last draft class and that are coming back for this 2024 team, has a work ethic that it takes to put himself in that type of position. So, you know, really interested to see what Ethan Burke can do this fall.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was looking at some betting odds for like the number one pick, and Ethan Burke had odds for the number one. I was like, that seems like a weird, like it's not going to happen, right? But the fact that he's he's like, I think he's like plus 3,000 to be the number one pick. So it'd be a very long shot, but maybe worth a buck or two. No, but like it's wild to me that that's like the second time in the last 12 hours I've seen Ethan Burke's name come up in the first round. So if the vibes are right on that. Westcott, man, thank you so much for spending some time with us to talk about the draft, man. If people want more of what you've got, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, Burn Orange Nation, of course, all the time. Find me at SBN_Westcott, WESCOTT on Twitter, never call it X as well. And thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun, Gerald.
Yeah, thanks, Wes. Thanks again to Westcott for joining us to talk about the draft. But now it's a part of the show where I whip around the rest of campus, and we down the 40, and we'll start with the Texas men's golf team winning the Big 12 championship, the first title for them since 2019 and the ninth Big 12 title for the organization overall, the 11th, I believe, Big 12 title for the school. They won the tournament by 18 strokes. They went actually into the final round up by 11 and built up their lead to beat out somebody you love to see, Oklahoma. Brian Stark was the low score for Texas at 5 under on the tournament, tied for 6th overall. Keaton Vo and Nathan Petronzio were 1 stroke back at 4 under. Tommy Morrison was tied at 11 at 3 under, rounding out the group of Longhorns that were under par for the tournament. So Texas, again, continues to take hardware with them out of the Big 12. And you know what? It feels good. On the way out, reminding them, hey, we are Texas. We'll continue to be Texas. And you're going to miss us. And maybe you won't. I don't know, because Texas has been winning absolutely everything. So next up for the golf team will be the NCAA tournament coming up in a few weeks, hoping to bring home a natty for the Horns. Speaking of teams hoping to bring home a natty, number one softball sweeps Iowa State over the weekend, 5-2 on Friday, 8-0 on a doubleheader over the weekend, 8-0 in the first game, 9-1 on the second, both in 5 innings. In the first game, Katie Stewart led the offensive charge for the Longhorns, which is something you're going to hear once again. She drove in 3 runs in that one, including a 2-run home run in the 4th and an RBI single in the 5th. Tegan Cavan got the win for Texas, her 14th win on the year after going 6 of 7 innings for 4 hits, 2 earned runs, and 8 strikeouts. Mac Morgan came in 1 inning of relief, struck out 2 to close that out. The doubleheader was all about the pitching. Lolly Gutierrez in the opener went a complete game, gave up just two hits, walked two, and struck out two. Iowa State started things out with a RBI walk, and then Mia Scott continued things with one for one and a two RBI hit. Reese Atwood hit a two-run home run in that one. Again, Mia Scott, Reese Atwood, the usual suspects. Reese Atwood continues to break records, a record-setting year for her with home runs. And then on the second game, Mack Morgan went all five innings as well, gave up seven hits, struck out two, but Iowa State managed to just turn one run off of those seven hits. Stewart once again led the charge for Texas, as she did in the opener, drove in a run in the first to take a 2-0 lead, then hit a two-run home run in the fourth to put Texas up 9-0. Mia Scott drove in two runs of her own, again, something I said you'd hear a lot, with a two-run double in the second. So Texas still trails Oklahoma by a game in the Big 12 standings. They've got Lubbock. They've got Texas Tech in Lubbock this weekend for the regular season finale. OU has Oklahoma State in Bedlam on the weekend. So really it seems like if Texas can sweep and OSU wins just one game, it looks like Texas has a shot at a Big 12 regular season title, which would be like the first time in what feels like forever that Oklahoma has not won that. On the other diamond, baseball against those Oklahoma Sooners won the season series and the weekend series 2-1. Got a little bit of help from Mother Nature, whoever you want to credit that for. But Texas won the weekend series 2-1, upsetting number 18 Oklahoma. Friday looked like the usual Friday for Texas, a 9-4 loss against OU. Saturday they pushed to Sunday, a doubleheader due to the weather in Oklahoma. Our hearts and our prayers go out to the folks in the Sooner State who are dealing with all of the loss in from those tornadoes and that massive outbreak of storms. We are praying for you, thinking about you, and hope that you and yours are well. But when the baseball took off on Sunday, Texas won the opener 8-6. It was a back-and-forth game all afternoon. OU actually took a 5-4 lead in the fifth, and Texas scored 3 in the sixth, 2 solo home runs and an RBI walk from Peyton Powell, added an insurance run in the eighth for Jalen Flores, his second RBI of the day. Chase Lummis came in and got a win in relief, 3 2/3 innings pitched with 3 hits and an earned run. The second game got a little spicy, a little dicey. The game actually was called in the seventh inning. Texas won that one 12-10. It was a it was a nail biter. Edge of your seat. They sold you the whole one, but you just needed the edge. Texas built a 6-1 lead in the third inning, all on 2-run home runs. 3 2-run home runs to win a 6-1 lead. Had a 5-run lead, but OU closed the gap to just one run with a 4-run third inning. Then Texas opened the lead back up. Another pair of 2-run home runs in the fifth and sixth inning. Bailey sent another one over the wall in the top of the seventh to give it a 12-8 lead, which actually for the second time in 7 days means Texas tied its single game home run record with 6, which is just absolutely ridiculous. OU closed it to 10, but then in a weather delay, took too long. The weather delay took too long, took them to 10 o'clock. The Big 12 said, if we're not back on the field by 10, we're going to call the game. And because it was late enough in the game, they called it a win for Texas. Again, proving once again that God is a Longhorn fan. Texas comes out with a 2-1 win over the Oklahoma Sooners. Continuing David Pierce's situation of like, I don't know what's happening on the weekday games. Or on I guess Friday's a weekday game too, technically. Is it a weekend game? I'm not sure. Either way, don't know what's happening on anything, but we'll always win on Sundays and throw in a Saturday win, too. So the race at the top of the Big 12 continues to be tight. Oklahoma State and West Virginia both swept their weekend series. Texas and Oklahoma are next in line. So they've got a opportunity, Texas, to move up. They've got Oklahoma State coming up this weekend after a midweek game against Sam Houston. So a lot left to be said for baseball. And Texas, against all stinking odds, is somehow still in the race for the Big 12 conference. Speaking of races, we've got rowing. Rowing back on the water and trying to reestablish themselves as the ones to beat. Texas wins the first, second, and third, placed second in the first four and second for beating Stanford in all of those first places. So as Kyle's not here to set me up, I'll do it myself. Suck it, trees. Stanford won the fourth, eighth, and the first four. But Texas, again, seems to have picked up the step that they lost last year, putting themselves in prime position to compete well at the NCAA championships at the end of May. Geese notwithstanding, we cannot obviously account for a natural impediment, a natural speed bump, I don't know what you call geese on the water, but They got in the way last year. Hopefully they don't get in the way this year. So Texas has the Big 12 championship in a couple of weeks on May 19th, and then the NCAA championships will hit at the end of May. Track and field was in action this weekend as well at the Texas Invitational. The women had five winners. Zia Holman won the women's 400. Olivia Howell won the women's 800. Akelia Smith, the triple and the long jump. Marilyn Wara won the shot put, and Allison Little won the steeplechase. 300 meters of running and jumping in the water is too much for me. On the men's side, Chris Brinkley won the 400 hurdles. Yusuf Bismana won the men's 800. Jeremiah Newby won the hammer and discus. Patrick Papari, shocker, won the shot put. And then Logan Patetti won the steeplechase. So we got 10 winners on the weekend across multiple events. Next up for Texas, they got the Arkansas Twilight on Friday and an opportunity to position themselves well again heading into the postseason for track. The transfer portal continues to giveth in the basketball realm, not just on the men's, but on the ladies' side as well. The ladies first announced their first edition on Monday, or I guess the first edition of Monday, earlier with a Miami transfer, Kayla Oldacre. A 6'6 post coming from the U to Austin. She was a 2022 All-American for McDonald's. Again, a 6'6 post. Vic Schaefer adding some size and some athleticism down low. On the men's side, Rodney Terry continues to bolster the backcourt through the portal, adding Vandy transfer guard Malik Presley into the fold. So Rodney Terry still has two spots to fill. I believe the scholarship limit is 13, and Texas currently sits at 11. So look for a couple of more ads from the portal in the offseason. That brings us to the end of the show, where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. And what I'm banging the drum this week on is something simple. Over the weekend, it was a particularly mean weekend on the internet. Like, I have been guilty on both my personal and the Longhorn Republic account of clapping at some people, right? I'll clap back at some people when it's necessary. But this weekend, on both sides of the conflict, there was some meanness. So the first thing that popped up, the NFL draft, if you don't know, I don't know how you got to this point in the show without knowing it, but at the NFL draft, Jamaal Charles came up and was one of the players that was selected to read picks for the Kansas City Chiefs. And those of you that don't know, Jamaal Charles has a diagnosed learning disability. He was diagnosed officially in third grade and actually used like sports and athletics as a way to like cope with his mental health and bullying. And now actually he serves as a global ambassador for the Special Olympics. Well, people didn't know that and decided to be mean to him on the internet about his ability his struggles through that moment. And I understand college football is about rivalry. It's about hating people. But like, I hate, the OU hate that we try to give them is like silly hate. It's like, you know, like we don't like them. Yeah, but I'm not going to make fun of somebody struggling to read, right? We shouldn't do that regardless of the reason, right? There are lots of reasons why some adults may struggle with that. But like, there is there is a right way and a wrong way to hate your rivals, which is ridiculous. But also, again, it wasn't just OU folks. On the Texas side, there was some really bad weather in Oklahoma, and Texas fans were making some really poor jokes about that situation. And I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I lived in Oklahoma for 13 years. I was one of the first people that got into Moore when the massive tornado hit there a few years ago. And that is nothing to joke about. There were houses completely gone. There are people's entire lives that were swept up in those things. And it is just not, it's never okay to joke about that. But as somebody who's seen it firsthand, it made me sick. So again, moral of the story, it is fine to hate your rivals. It is fine to make fun of your rivals, but make fun of them for going nearly a century without a national championship or spending their entire tenure in a conference, not playing premier games and not winning that conference or even finishing atop their division in the conference, right? Or make fun of your rivals for, I don't know, chasing good players out of town or having a defensive coordinator turned head coach that maybe can't get it done. There are a lot of legitimate things to make fun of your rivals for. Don't make fun of real life things, right? If you do that, you suck, period. And that's all we got for you this week. Again, it'll be me and a guest host for the next few weeks as the Carpenters get used to their new life and new situation in the family. Again, we send all of our loves and vibes, and we sent them we're going to send them some food gift cards, because as somebody who has three kids, done that three times, there's something about being able to just order food, not have to worry about it. That works out really well. But we are excited for them. We'll have Kyle back in a few weeks whenever that works out. Thanks so much for tuning in again. You can catch us on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Catch me on Twitter at GH Group. Kyle is on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. Thank you so much for tuning in again this weekend. Until next time, hook up.